I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Getting Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Let's talk football with Mike Florio at Pro Football Talk. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. And Mike, we have our Super Bowl combatants. And I have to tell you, just not having the Patriots involved, it was a 3 in a row and 4 out of 5. And to be without that sort of heavy sense, the gravity they always bring, the history they always bring, this is refreshing. Do you think so?
Oh, absolutely. Look, this is the kind of thing that the NFL loves. I remember back in the 70s, Commissioner Pete Rozelle hated the fact that it was the Steelers, the Cowboys, the Raiders over and over and over again. And the fact that a team that was 4-12 last year in the 49ers is in the Super Bowl this year, that's the kind of thing that helps the NFL sell hope to every fan of every team. You're just one offseason away from reversing your fortunes dramatically, and that's what they want people to believe, even for the teams where it is objectively unbelievable, like the Browns or other really bad teams. The 49ers were almost as bad as it could get a year ago, and they've turned it around quickly.
What do you make of some of the consequences, the potential consequences for teams that flamed out in these playoffs? I'm looking at the Matt LaFleur press conference this morning. He was asked if Mike Pettine, his defensive coordinator, is coming back. His response was, "We're not there yet. We're still working through everything." There's the way Bill O'Brien lost his game. He still retains total control of that franchise. Should there be consequences like this for one game like that?
Well, I don't think it's one game that causes it to happen. It's one game that creates the opportunity for it to happen. You know, in Seattle, they had the necessity to make some major changes a couple of years ago, but they kept making the playoffs every year, and they never made the major changes. It took a year of not making the playoffs to give them the opening to do what they needed to do. And I'd say if a change is needed at defensive coordinator in Green Bay, then it's not something that just manifested itself in one game. I also wouldn't be surprised if Matt LaFleur sees an opportunity to get Wade Phillips, who's dangling around out there. And if Wade Phillips had been available a year ago, Matt LaFleur may have hired him in the first place. So I think that may be part of it as well, the opportunity to upgrade your staff. But, the defense was good at times for the Packers this year. But, yeah, when you run into a brick wall and it feels like your defense has no answers for a running game that should be able, in theory, to be neutralized some way, somehow, and you knew what you were getting into and you knew what they do and you can't stop it, then some of that does blow back against the defensive coordinator.
I heard the Wade Phillips noise, and not for nothing, I went to the school, but I know some people who have thrown the name around. Do you hear Jim Leonard's name mentioned for DC jobs in the NFL?
You know, he's a guy who was like on that rising star list, and then it's subsided in recent years. It really is amazing how guys land on the radar screen as hot candidates, and then they kind of slide off, and then they're back, and then they slide off. But that's one that I've heard from time to time as well, in recent years. But it doesn't have the same cachet that it had a handful of years ago.
What domino falls first that starts the propagation of quarterback moves in what we know is going to be a volatile, unstable quarterback market from top to bottom, from young quarterbacks to veterans across the board?
I think that the first one is going to be Brady knowing whether or not the Patriots will bring him back or he will sign a contract. I just feel like that announcement is the first step if he doesn't go back. And I think right now, if I had to bet, I'd say he's not going back. But I think that's the one that, number one, gets everyone's attention, because right now it's not quite Peyton Manning in 2012, because in 2012 we all assumed the Colts weren't bringing him back. He had the neck issue. They had the first overall pick. They were taking Andrew Luck. They weren't going to bring back Peyton Manning. With Brady, there's still people who maybe haven't been paying close attention to it, who haven't realized there's a damn good chance he's not coming back. Once it gets out that he's not coming back, once there's an announcement or a decision, I think that's when everybody kind of says, holy crap. And then that's when this carousel spins with a lot of veteran quarterbacks available, a lot of guys who aren't unrestricted free agents, but could be available, whether it's Andy Dalton or Cam Newton, or is someone going to make a run at Taysom Hill, who's a restricted free agent of the New Orleans Saints, if they keep Drew Brees. There's a lot of different ways that this offseason is going to go, but I think that it officially begins once the Patriots inform Brady that they're not bringing him back, or Brady informs the Patriots he's not coming back, or basically a mutual announcement. And I think that's what it would be, some sort of a mutual statement that both sides have decided to move on.
Similar to the way the Peyton Manning era ended in Indy?
Yeah, right, exactly. But it was more like it just was inevitable then. They fired the coach. They fired the GM. Peyton Manning was beside himself. Everything was different. They're going to draft Andrew Luck. We knew by now what was coming. Right now, we don't know what's coming. And I really do think the next step will be either a contract that keeps Tom Brady in New England or a joint statement from both sides where everybody says all the right things and they profess undying love for each other indefinitely. But the message is Tom Brady's moving on and the Patriots are moving on, because it's not just Brady's next destination. New England then becomes a player in this veteran quarterback game of musical chairs. You know, people assume Jared Stidham becomes the next quarterback of the Patriots. Why would you do that when you've got plenty of other alternatives out there, guys that they could pursue, like a Teddy Bridgewater, who was 5-0 as a starter. Cam Newton, if he's available, he's 2-0 lifetime against the Patriots. I mentioned Taysom Hill. Wouldn't it be fascinating to see him on the Patriots? You know, they have always struggled with mobile quarterbacks, but they haven't had a mobile quarterback. They haven't needed one because Tom Brady's been so good. Without Brady, do they go in the direction of a guy who can make things happen with his legs as well as his arm? I mean, the Patriots angle to the Brady future is every bit as fascinating as the Brady angle, because I don't think it's just going to be next man up on the Patriots depth chart.
I think the quarterbacks in this free agent class and then the subsequent draft are fascinating, because you can draw a line from the Tom Brady decision to what the Bengals are going to choose to do with the first overall pick because of the way the top 10 or top 15 rather is set. You've got the Chargers, who I don't think are as bad as at 5-11. The Panthers, the same kind of situation. You've got the Colts at 13. There are moves within moves here. And if the Bengals are or are not taking Burrow at number one overall and instead try to move down, then you've got, you know, dominoes that fall all the way through with teams that could just grab the next get-me-through quarterback as opposed to drafting and resetting for future.
Well, and you've got two waves of it, right? You've got the free agent moves that are going to happen in March, and by the contracts that are given out to these quarterbacks, you'll know whether or not your guy is going to be the quarterback or whether he's the Mike Glennon to the Mitch Trubisky that gets drafted by the team. And that's why I think a guy like Phillip Rivers, I don't think he's going to find a landing spot, because I think any offer he gets is going to be of a financial magnitude where he knows he may get supplanted by whoever gets drafted in late April. But yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of tentacles. This can go a lot of way, and we could see the fabric of the league get really ripped apart from the standpoint of quarterbacks matched up with this team, that team, that team. And Brady, I think, is the epicenter of all of that movement and activity.
If all that movement happens, do you see that as being good for the league?
Yes, I think it's absolutely good for the league. Now, you know, it's not being driven by that sense that players are taking over like NBA players can. It's just it's the natural consequence of older quarterbacks who may want too much money, and who currently are under contract with teams that are looking around the league and seeing all these great young quarterbacks that all these other teams have, and they're thinking, I want to get mine, right? How much longer do I hang on to Phillip Rivers when I know I can go get a much younger guy who maybe is a much greater potential star in LA? The Patriots, they're constantly bedeviled by running quarterbacks. When do we get ours? We've seen Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield. And I think for some of these teams, there's that urgency to go get a younger guy. And maybe the middle ground is find a veteran who's younger than the guy you have, who's a stopgap for a couple of years while you wait for your Mahomes, Jackson, et cetera, to come along.
what's meaningful to you in staff construction season when guys move from team to team? Just got word the Jaguars are hiring Jay Gruden to run their offense. It looks like Freddie Kitchens reportedly is going to land on Joe Judge's staff in New York along with Jason Garrett, where it could just be exchanges of names that end up a net zero. When do you know that one of these moves matters?
Well, it matters when the coach's background is on the other side of the ball than the guy that he's hired, or when it's a Joe Judge, who's a special teams coach that had a mild enhancement to his resume of receivers coach for one season. You know, Jason Garrett's got more juice in that setting, and he's going to have more potential influence. And also when you've got cross-pollination in the same division. I mean, the idea that Jason Garrett goes from the Cowboys to the Giants, I mean, that's beautiful. You got to love that kind of stuff. So when you have a former coach of a team who ends up as a coordinator with another team in the division, that's interesting. When the coordinator is operating on the side of the ball that the head coach isn't an expert in, that's more relevant. That guy has more juice. I mean, you know, Bill Lazor being the offense coordinator of the Bears, who cares? Matt Nagy runs the offense. Pat Shurmur being offensive coordinator of the Broncos, hey, that's significant because Vic Fangio's in charge of the defense. So I think it's all case by case based on the relationships between the new assistant coach and his former gig, and also how much juice that guy's going to have in his new spot.
Mike, we can take an informal poll of all of our NFL experts as we get closer and closer to Chiefs and Niners. How many points would the Chiefs have to be down at halftime for you to write them out of that game?
Here's the thing. If the 49ers running game is working, they will be up early. And if their running game is working, it's not going to stop. You know, the Chiefs were down 24, they came back against the Texans. They were down 10 points two different times, they came back. And they were ahead at halftime in both of those games. I think, and I personally believe that when Raheem Mostert took that 3rd-and-8 trap play to the end zone against the Packers, it's like, that's it, it's done. Thanks for playing, Packers, it's over. I feel like if the 49ers can shred the Chiefs the way that they've shredded everyone else on the ground, if they can do that right out of the gates, I think 7-0. May be too much for the Chiefs to overcome. And I think really the challenge for the 49ers, I believe firmly, is going to be hold the ball as long as you can, shorten the game, reduce the number of drives that the Chiefs have, and create a situation where every time Patrick Mahomes is on the field, he feels a greater sense of urgency and a greater sense of pressure to do something because he's not going to have as many chances as he did against the Texans or the Titans. And to me, and this is where the brilliance of Kyle Shanahan comes through. He's not so smart that he tries to outsmart himself. He understands, if it works, I'm going to keep doing it. I'm not going to run to set up a play-action pass from the 45-yard line that I throw to the end zone for a quick touchdown. If I'm running and they're not stopping it, I'm going to keep running, and I'm going to keep running, and I'm going to keep running. Fewer things can go wrong, and I can control the game, shorten the game, and keep Patrick Mahomes off the field. That's the only way you can stop him, is to keep him off the field. So that's why I think if the running game is working, it's almost like a Vikings game where you know right away whether or not they're going to be able to move the ball and score points. You're going to know right away whether or not the 49ers can or can't run the ball against the Chiefs. And then if they can't, that's when it gets interesting. That's when the passing game has to try to match the Chiefs, and that's when it becomes much, much harder for the 49ers to win.
Mike, lastly and real quickly, I don't know if you share my assessment that the current vectors of the Antonio Brown saga are not headed in a good direction, and it keeps looking like something that is sending all of the alarms out of something that that is not going to end well. And I'm wondering who is left to care about and for Antonio Brown, and perhaps more importantly, some of the people around him, the people accusing him, the people involved in his life.
I hate to speculate on someone's mental health, because unless we're that person or someone close to them, we don't know. There's always a chance that he's perfectly fine. He's just a complete and total jerk. But to the extent that he has a health condition that requires treatment and evaluation and care, it's a sad situation, because the thing that is causing him these problems, that brain, that's the brain that has to consciously decide, I'm going to get help. And how do you make the decision, I'm going to get help, when your brain is impaired by whatever health condition it is for which you need help? And it quickly becomes the dog chasing his tail. Drew Rosenhaus fired him last week in the hopes that that would be the wake-up call. Where's the moment that Antonio Brown bottoms out, acknowledges he needs help, and goes and gets it, instead of constantly blaming everyone else, constantly finding fault, constantly thinking he's in the right. I mean, he's currently locked himself in his house to avoid this battery investigation against a moving truck driver that Brown and another guy are accused of beating up. Like, this does not feel like it's moving in the right direction, and I feel badly for him, and I wish there was someone who could get his attention, but I don't think there is, and that's the tragedy of all of this. And I think it's common to these types of things. If he does have a mental health condition, you have to get through to the person whose brain is impaired that brain needs to consciously choose to go get help.
Mike Florio, thank you as always.
See you guys.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.